are listening to Any Given Sunday, a part of the Dead End Podcast Network. Please subscribe to our podcast on Apple, Spotify, Google, and all other podcasting services. Please make sure you check out Dead End Hip Hop, Dead End Sports, Dead End Gaming, Is the Mic Still On, Chris Platt's Strictly Hip Hop and Hoops Talk, and a host of other shows on our podcast network. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show. For Sunday, May 5th, 2019, this is Any Given Sunday. I'm your host, Manny Brown. What's up, everybody? Happy Cinco de Mayo. Hopefully you guys are having a happy, safe, blessed week, enjoying the weekend, not wilding out too much, hopefully. Hopefully you guys are staying safe out there, enjoying the festivities. I know a lot of people like to go out and drink and have fun and do different things on Cinco de Mayo, especially when it's on the weekend. So hopefully you guys are being safe in all of your activities, enjoying the weather. I know the weather here is great, so hopefully it's great around the country. How you guys doing? Special episode. Decided to do a different episode this week than normal. Kind of covered, just kind of one singular topic this week. Not kind of, a couple of things or just kind of a current events type of thing. More so a singular topic. And we'll do that from time to time here on the show when it warrants it. Some weekends, some weeks we'll just do a singular show on a singular topic. Much like last week, although last week we got into the draft and then we got into Endgame. So it was kind of two topics mostly, but, mixed in with some NBA playoffs. But, last year last week was mostly Endgame, I would say. Probably all of it was Endgame, plus a lot of positive feedback from that show. So if you haven't listened to it, go back and listen to it. It's a really dope time. I had a good time with Justin, as always, man. We got into Endgame and hopefully we didn't spoil it too much. The ban on the spoilers are up tomorrow, so hopefully you guys have seen it by now. If you haven't, I don't know what to do. We're gonna talk about it on social media, so I guess you just stay off social media, which is not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing to have a moratorium on social media use. Maybe it's a good time to take a break. But so the ban is over tomorrow, according to the Russo brothers. So if you have not seen it by now, then I don't know what to tell you. So no, but I think we had a good time. I think we had a good episode. A lot of positive feedbacks from that show. So check it out. This week's show, we're going to talk about the latest 30 for 30. We're going to review that for a second here. My guest this week is the acclaimed filmmaker Jonathan Hawk, who directed The Dominican Dream, the 30 for 30 on Felipe Lopez and his career, his life, and et cetera. Obviously, he's done a lot of 30 for 30s. This is actually his fifth 30 for 30 that he has done. He directed Of Miracles and Men. He's directed Survive in Advance, Unguarded, the Chris Herron story. Obviously The Dominican Dream now, and I forget what's the other one. Oh, The Best That Never Was, the Marcus Dupree story. All critically acclaimed, all well told, all well done, great films, some of the best 30 for 30s in the list, in my opinion, especially with Survive in Advance and Best That Never Was. And I'll say off the bat that Dominican Dream was definitely up there. It's a great, great film, great story. Great documentary. So well done. So we'll have him on the show for a few minutes later on to talk about the film and talk about the process that came about to creating the story. We're going to review the latest 30 for 30. And we do this from time to time. We review 30 for 30s. I know I did it a lot on the old show. So it's something that I'm going to definitely carry over now into Any Given Sunday, is just reviewing 30 for 30s and especially 30 for 30s that are big. Because some 30 for 30s tend to vary as far as in greatness and also the importance and relevance of the story. And I think that this one is important. It's relevant to not just sports, but what's going on right now in our society with immigration and immigration being a hot button, topic and issue. It seems like almost daily. So I think it warrants an episode. It warrants us talking about it. It warrants us spending some time on this story. And then Felipe Lopez himself, the man, the career, the athlete, I think it warrants some time to discuss this and discuss his impact, not only that he have on Washington Heights, but the Dominican people in this country, Dominican Republic in general, the impact that he continues to still have. So I think it warrants this. So yeah, I think we're going to definitely talk about it and get into it. First and foremost, I guess general thoughts on the film. Like I said, I thought it was great. I thought it was well done. 2 hours, doesn't drag. Not a lot of parts where it didn't feel like there was stuff that was just thrown in there or things that didn't need to be added. I thought it flowed well. It moved well. It was paced well. It told a great story. Really kind of told the story of Felipe from when he was born, his upbringings, his time in the Dominican Republic growing up to making the move to the U.S. and then just talking about the basketball part of his life. And so I thought it flowed very, very well. The movie didn't drag at all. And a lot of times, sometimes when you have with these 30 for 30s, that sometimes they tend to drag a little bit. They're part, you know, it's weird because some of them tend to be too short, especially the ones that you really like. Sometimes they're kind of too short. And then there's other ones that you feel like, man, I like it, but it, you know, it's kind of long in some parts. They probably could have, you know, they could have taken out some pieces here and there. But I thought this one was well done. I don't think I didn't see a part of the film that I thought, okay, maybe it dragged for too long, or they added too much, or we didn't need to see that. This could have been an extra. I liked everything about the film. I really did. And it's interesting because the film, you know, it's kind of has two dual themes. You know, the first theme is obviously Felipe Lopez, the man, his career, his life, the things that he continues to do. You know, the stuttering here, but the story of success, failure, and redemption in a lot of ways. So it has that kind of theme. And then of course it has, you know, the underlying theme is, you know, immigration and the immigration process and the story of immigration through the lens of the Dominican people, which is a story that isn't told much, quite honestly, in our country. So I thought that was very, very interesting. It was very fascinating to kind of have those two dual storylines going on at the same time. I loved it. I loved the film. Well done. I got a lot of great interviews. Alex Rodriguez was in it. Fran Fraschilla was in it. Chauncey Billups was in it. I'm trying to think about who else was in the film of note. You know, obviously he had some, college teammates, high school teammates, you know, his family was in it. His mother was great. I thought she added a lot to it. His mother was great. His sister was great. His brother added a lot. I'm trying to think who else was in the film. I can't remember anybody off the top of my head, but you know, I had a lot of good guests. I guess that would be my one nitpick on the film, that I would have wanted to see a little bit more of some other folks, like, you know, obviously you're doing, a lot of the story takes place in college basketball. So I would have liked to see maybe Dickie V in it a little bit more. Obviously Jay Billis, you know, people that, you know, were personalities, college basketball personalities, you know, talking heads, et cetera. And as it goes, sometimes, you know, who knows, maybe their schedules didn't line up, or they just didn't want to be a part of the film, or whatever happened. So it's a slight nitpick, nothing major. I mean, the film was great without them. I just, you know, that probably be my like one observation. It didn't have as many of the major college basketball names that you would have thought. You know, maybe an interview with Coach K or anybody that recruited him, somebody of that nature. But overall, I mean, it was great. It was fine. Like I said, Stephen A. Smith was in it. You know, a lot of people were in it. So it made up for it. Alex Rodriguez, I thought was great in it. I was really surprised A-Rod added a lot to it, you know, and you could tell. And I know a lot of times with A-Rod, it's kind of hard to tell because, you know, you never know what's put on or what's for the camera with Alex Rodriguez. But no, it really seemed like he idolized this kid. Like it was, you know, that this kid had a profound impact on Alex Rodriguez, and it showed in the film. And I thought that was very cool. So yeah, I thought it had a lot of great guests in it. I thought it had a good narrative to it. Like I said, it flowed well. It flowed well. It was paced well. It didn't feel like it was long at times. I don't think I saw anything that I felt like needed to be cut or could have been just, you know, filler or anything like that. So that was great. The direction was great. The questions, the interviews, the guests added a lot to the show, or to the 2 hours. Overall, I thought it was a great film. I really do. And I guess I guess why this film touched me in a way is because obviously you guys know I'm Panamanian, and the Panamanian immigration story is similar to the Dominican immigration story. And that instantly kind of, you know, drew me into it. Obviously, it's something that I could relate to. I can relate to the stories that, you know, the mother was saying, the sister was saying, you know, the themes that were touched upon in the film. I can relate to those things. So instantly I gravitated towards it. Plus the fact that Felipe Lopez, you know, was this, I mean, he really was this big deal. He was a big deal, not just to the Dominican Republic and Dominicans here in the U.S. or in, especially in New York City, but other Latin, you know, ethnicities. You know, he was a big deal. You know, I remember my brother telling me stories. You know, I was young for Felipe Lopez, so I missed out on the Felipe Lopez hype. Obviously, I knew who he was and I knew about the story, but I was young, you know, like when Felipe was in high school and was the high school player of the year and all that. Like I was, you know, seven, eight, 9 years old. So I still was, I was into sports, but you know how it is when you're at that young age, you don't know enough to know enough. You know what I mean? So I kind of missed out on the Felipe Lopez hype, but, you know, it was big. He was a big deal, man. And he gave a lot of people hope because, you know, at the time, and the film does a good job of talking about it, you know, people from Central America, especially Dominicans, you know, you're baseball players. It's a baseball hotbed. So to see this kid who was really great at basketball, this Dominican kid that was great at basketball, it was a unicorn. It was something that you didn't see all the time. And he had a lot of hype to him, I mean, you know, I remember, you know, my brother telling me stories about Felipe Lopez. He was a beast. He was this, you know, my brother right around the same time was playing ball, you know, himself, and, you know, just told me the stories about how this kid was just this phenomenon. Like he was just this great athlete. I mean, 6'6", tall, lanky, could dunk, could fly out the gym. I mean, it's just, you know, all the story, you know, all the hype that you can imagine. I mean, you imagine Felipe Lopez now in this era of social media, of instant attention. I mean, he'd be a, you know, YouTube sensation, kind of like similar to what Zion Williams was before. Zion Williamson was before he, you know, he came to Duke, was just this social media sensation with dunks and, you know, the feats of athleticism. You know, that was kind of similar in a lot of ways. Like, you know, he was the 90s version of Zion Williamson in a lot of ways. This kid that just came in with a lot of hype, with a lot of flash, with a lot of notoriety and attention, and people looked at him as the great white hope, you know, or the great Latino hope. You know, he was the Dominican Jordan, you know, all the things that were thrown out there. And the film does a great job of chronicling all this and talking about this in depth. And, you know, that's the thing that stuck out to me the most. This was, the story was, you know, obviously being from New York, living a similar immigration experience, my parents being from Panama, and, you know, Felipe Lopez, his parents being from the Dominican Republic, he being from the Dominican Republic, like I can relate to the stories of the mom and having to leave her kids behind and come the visa process, all things that, you know, my family in some similar way went through. So, you know, it was very, you know, obviously when you can relate to the material in the way that I could, it's easy to fall, you know, to be attracted or to be drawn in and to fall for the story because it hits home. So, that's why I was so drawn to it. It was so keen to it. It was like, I thought it was a great, great story to tell. And, you know, obviously the film chronicles the rise, not quite the fall, because that's the other thing that I love that the film did. You know, there's this narrative out there that he was a bust and he was a failure. And it really wasn't, you know, I think that that's one of the unintended consequences of media now and media in the last 10 or 15 years is that we're so quick to try to crown people and to anoint people the next, that when they don't live up to those absurd hypes, when they don't live up to the immense pressure that we put on them, you know, they're bust. They failed. They're this, they're that. They were terrible. What were we thinking? He was a bust. He was a joke. He can't shoot. He can't score. You know, like we're so quick to anoint these kids and then we break them down. And that's always the tough part. And, you know, I think there's this narrative that has been going around for the last 10, 15 years that Felipe Lopez was a bust or that he was, you know, wasn't as good as advertised. And the film does a really good job of saying that that's not the case, that while he may not have lived up to the absurd hypes that were given to him, because it wasn't no fault of his own. Like, it wasn't like he was out here saying, yo, call me the next Jordan, call me this, call me that. You know, he wasn't doing that. That was given to him. The media gave him that. The media made him the spectacle that he was. You know, obviously the fact that he was talented and he was great and all the political and the racial aspects of it made him this bigger, this larger than life figure. You know, the media hyped it up just as much as anybody else. So the film does a great job of talking about that, talking about how the media kind of builds these kids up and then breaks them down when they don't live up to these absurd hypes. And it's true. You know, he didn't live up to that hype, but he was a very good. I mean, obviously he was a tremendous high school basketball player. Was a legend, one of the great high school basketball players of his generation. So he had a great deal of success in high school. And in college, you know, he had a good college career. You listen to some people talk and you would think that Felipe Lopez was just terrible in college, and he wasn't. You know, he was not bad in college. He had a very good career in college. You know, he wasn't the savior of the program. And the problem with St. John's are more deeply rooted than just Felipe Lopez. You know, St. John's has been in a state of flux for almost close to 25 years, almost 30 years, you know, since Carneseca retired. You know, St. John's has been, you know, a wasteland in a lot of ways. They've been, you know, they've hired and fired coaches left and right. They haven't been able to figure out who they're going to be, what they're going to be. Obviously, within that, the Big East itself has gone through a reshuffle and its own turmoil. So he came to St. John's as the savior, and it was unfair. It was unfair pressure to put on a high school kid, especially a kid like Felipe Lopez, comes from a different country, doesn't understand. He probably didn't understand everything that was involved with being a part of St. John's and being a part of that culture and being a part of that program, which is so deeply rooted in New York City tradition. St. John's, when St. John's is great, it's beloved in the city. So to having to come to St. John's and be the savior, that was a lot of pressure, and he was never going to live up to that. No one can live up to those incredible. I mean, only a select few can ever live up to those insane potential. And this was that insane hyperbole that gets thrown out there. So the film does a great job of chronicling that. And I thought that was one of my favorite parts of the film, was just talking about the perceived nature of his fall, that, you know, he wasn't as good as advertised. And I guess if you're looking at it from was he the Dominican Jordan? No. Was he this next great superstar? No. But he was a very good player. He had a good college career. And, you know, I was surprised, because even myself, and that's the fascinating part of when you watch these 30 for 30, is that you watch them and, you know, even stories that you think you knew, you learn a lot about, because you listen to different perspectives, obviously 20, 30 years after the fact, different perspectives, different voices, stories that you had never heard about. And one of the things that I didn't realize was that how much he was a better NBA player than I think people gave him credit for. I think in the film it chronicles, his last couple of years with Minnesota, how he was really starting to come on. And, you know, I mean, he wasn't going to be an all-star, but he was a very good, serviceable, productive player. I mean, had he not gotten hurt, you know, who knows? He'd be one of those guys that plays in the league for 10, 12, 13 years, finds a career, finds a niche, and plays in the league for a long time. And it's unfortunate that he got hurt. Because he was a better, you know, I looked at his numbers and he was a better pro than I think people give him credit for. You know, there's this notion that he was just this like absolute bust, and he wasn't. But again, if you're comparing it to the insane hype that he came in with, obviously he didn't live up to that. But that's not his fault. And I think sometimes in life, and, you know, as fans and sports fans and media, you know, we anoint these guys so much. And again, we put so much unfair hype and hyperbole and, you know, he's the next this, or he's the next that, or he's the white this, or the black that, or the Hispanic this, or the Dominican that. Like, we just put so much crazy stuff out there that these kids are, it's impossible for these kids to live through. And it's funny, because it kind of reminds me now of what Zion Williams is going through. You know, I keep calling him Zion Williams for some reason. I don't know. Zion Williamson. I should know this. He went to Duke. But Zion Williamson, you know, it's interesting that he's kind of going through the similar, you know, a similar thing. You know, obviously at the beginning of the year, everybody was comparing Zion to LeBron. He's this, he's that, you know, who is this? So it's kind of similar. That's why I find it interesting that, like, man, imagine if social media existed in 1993 or 1994 or 1995 when Felipe was at the peak of his popularity, at the peak of his hype. You know, I mean, the hype would be incredible. I mean, he'd probably have YouTube videos now up, you know, with dunks and highlights and things of that nature. So it's crazy. It's interesting. Another small nitpick, I wish that with the NBA, and it probably did. It probably just, you know, a lot of times with these films, it's like anything. You know, there's a strong, vigorous editing process, and they have to get these films ready for TV. So they have to fit in under 90 minutes to, you know, almost 2 hours. So a lot of things are going to get cut, and I'm sure that they probably go in depth more with the NBA stuff. I would have liked to see them talk more about the NBA, maybe have a couple of NBA guests on there, quotes from his former teammates. I mean, like I said, it had Chauncey Billups on there. I would have liked to see maybe KG on the show. Again, small nitpicks. It didn't make or break the film for me. Just small nitpicks. That's all. So I would have liked them seen them discuss a little bit more the NBA part of it, because he did have an injury, a major injury that basically ended his NBA career. I would have loved for them to touch on that a little bit more, go into that in depth a little bit more. But I think they just probably cut that part out or breeze through that part because they probably felt like it wasn't important, or, you know, obviously to fit all the other things that they had to fit in there as well. So yeah, it talks about his rise. I thought another interesting part of the film was the conundrum that he had, you know, deciding to either, you know, come out early, come straight out of high school and go into the NBA. And I didn't, that's another aspect of the story that I learned as well. I didn't know all the machinations of, like, coming out early, you know, or leaving straight from high school, going into pros, the one and done aspect of it, where, you know, he could have easily played that 1 year at St. John's his freshman year. We had a really good year. And then came out same way, kind of like Iverson, kind of like Iverson, Steph, Stephon Marbury, the rest of those guys that came out after 1 year of going into college, that same kind of draft class. He could have been in that draft. He could have been in the 96 draft. He could have been in the 96 draft with Iverson and Marbury and Kobe. Obviously, we all know that the significance of that draft class, probably the greatest draft class of all time. You know, that or 84. It's really up for debate. But just that aspect of the story, I found was very, very, very interesting. I love that part of the story. I love there was a genuine kind of a struggle with him. Like, he thought about it. And I love the fact that, you know, he decided to stay. He decided, you know, that his mom, you know, I love that he, you know, in the interview, he talks about how, you know, I wasn't going to make that decision on my own. Like, I wasn't going to surpass my mom and my dad and my sisters. Like, this was a big decision, not just for me, but for my family. Like, so I love that aspect of it. And it rings true to today's news. You know, obviously, one of the big hot topic issues in sports is the one and done rule. And, you know, how do you feel about it? And I've kind of come around to it. Like, I used to hate one and dones. Like, I used to hate it. I thought it ruined the sport, and it has ruined college basketball. It's hurt the game a lot over the last couple of years, but I've come around to understanding, like, yo, these kids have money to make, they have careers, and you know, who am I to sit there and say they shouldn't come out at this age, or they shouldn't come out straight from high school? If you're 18 years old and you could go fight a war, or you could be on a battleship somewhere, or you could be in a tank somewhere, then you should be able to go play basketball for a living. So I get it, I understand it, but I just thought that part of the story was, you know, something that it's in the news in today's world too. You know, the constant struggle that these kids go through to decide, you know, whether to stay or go. Because I think some of us kind of feel like, oh, these kids just, they come into college and that's it. They know they're leaving. And yes, some of them, the majority of them know that they're going to be one and done. But there's some that legitimately enjoy the college experience, want to go to college, want to pursue a degree, want to go out there and stay 3-4 years. You know, I'm sure there's a large group of them that would prefer to stay in college, pursue a degree, have fun, play basketball, live that college atmosphere and environment. But, you know, hey, you know, when you got an NBA executive or an NBA GM waving $40 million at you and you come from an impoverished neighborhood or you come from a hood or a ghetto, like, it's not that difficult of a decision, you know? Do I want to sit in college and risk myself being hurt or, you know, things not playing out or going through different coaching changes and being called a bust or having your game dissected every single night? Do I rather go through that for 2, 3, 4 years? Or do I rather go to the NBA, sit on a bench, but I'm making a guaranteed contract? You know, it's a decision. It's a decision. And I like the fact that the film touched on that a lot. You know, it seemed like it was really a struggle for him because he really thought about it. Like, he really decided, like, what should I do? You know, should I go? And the film points out that he had a hell of an opportunity. There was a lot of teams that were interested in him. And, you know, you always wonder what would have happened had he been the first. Because, you know, obviously the film goes on to cover that Kevin Garnett ended up being the first one to really test the waters and jump right out and come right out of high school into the pros. And, you know, who knows? Maybe if Felipe Lopez comes out right around the same time or a year later or a year before in that case, you know, who knows? Maybe he's a top five, top 10 pick. It's interesting to go back and look at these things and look how it played out. And who knows where his career would have been had he come out, you know, maybe he gets lost in the NBA system. Maybe he, we've talked about it plenty of times on the show that, you know, teams in the NBA don't have time to really develop. They've gotten better at it. The unintended consequences of tanking being so universally accepted now in basketball is that it has allowed teams to kind of, and this is also due to the rise of analytics as well, is that it's allowed teams to focus more on player development more, and, you know, because I think that was one of the issues in the NBA, you know, even going back to, you know, 5, 10 years ago, where these kids would be drafted, you know, right out of high school or even just 1 year in college, and they didn't have time to develop. These kids came in raw. They didn't have time to develop. They'd sit on an NBA bench because, of course, they're coming into an organization where coaches on a hot seat. These coaches, they're coaching for their job, so they don't have time to sit there and try to develop a player. You know, you think you're Coach A and you're coaching the Orlando Magic. Do you have time to sit there and develop, you know, stud rookie with, you know, number 12 pick in the draft? You don't have time to develop him. You don't have time to sit there and see what he's got. You got to win games or you're going to lose your job. It's up to that kid to develop and put the work in. So, you know, and a lot of times they get lost in the NBA system. And what I mean by that is, you know, that, like I said, they don't have a chance to develop. They get traded a couple times. They go from one bad situation to another bad situation to another bad situation. Guess what? They don't develop. They end up out of the league. And then, of course, the blame gets shifted onto them when realistically they never stood a chance because they didn't have a chance, the proper opportunity to develop, and they got lost in the NBA system. You know, it's hard when you got to think about it. A lot of these kids, you know, they come from high school programs that won, where they were the man, and even college programs where they won and they were the man. And then they come into the NBA and you're on the Grizzlies and you're on a 60 loss team. And then you get traded to the Kings and you're on a 60 plus loss team, you know, so it just becomes a vicious cycle. So I love how that the film tackled that part as well, too. Like, you know, it had great guests, great interviews talking about it. And, you know, how he, you know, blew his opportunity. You know, he had two opportunities to come out. He had opportunity one, which was right out of high school. Then he had opportunity two, which is, you know, probably after his freshman year, he could have came out and, you know, he decided not to. And, but it doesn't seem like he's regretful of that. You know, it seems like he's at peace with it. Seems like he made a decision that was ultimately happy for him and what he wanted to do. So ultimately that's important. But yeah, just to wrap it up a little bit, you know, it was a great film. I really enjoyed it. If you haven't seen it, make it your business to go watch it. You know ESPN, they're going to air it about 45 times and it's going to be on demand too. So you'll have opportunities to watch it. I loved it. If I had to give it a grade, I'd give it an A. I thought it was a great, 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 great documentary. A fun 2 hours. It's up there. It's up there. I don't know where I would rank it in the list of great 30 for 30s. It's up there, though. I think it's up there. Obviously, it's up there with OJ, Made in America. It's up there with the Evander Holyfield Tyson 30 for 30. It's up there with Survive in Advance. It's up there with Pony Excess. We all know the great 30 for 30s. It's up there. It's up there. It's definitely up there. We could come back and have another show with the lists and rankings of my favorite. I mean, we might do that, actually. We might do that. But it's one of the great 30 for 30s you're going to watch, man. It's a fantastic movie, fantastic documentary, interesting figure, Felipe Lopez, and go out of your way to see it. Go out of your way to see it. It's really dope. You know, Felipe Lopez looks like he's happy. He's enjoying a wonderful life. He's giving back to his community in the Dominican Republic. The film pays a lot of attention to that, focuses a lot of time on that. His work now, he works for the NBA Cares program. It goes back, builds basketball courts, provides the kids with supplies to play basketball. As you guys know, Dominican Republic is a very poor nation. So every little thing, every little bit helps. And that's big, man. That's big. It's a wonderful show. So you guys definitely make it your business to go check it out, for real. But we're going to take a quick break, and then after the break, we'll be back with my guest for this week, Jonathan Hawk, who is the director of The Dominican Dream. So stay tuned for that. We'll be back after this. Welcome back to the show. My guest this week is the acclaimed filmmaker Jonathan Hawk. He is a 10-time Emmy Award-winning producer, director, writer, and editor. He's directed such films as Through the Fire, Lost Sons of Havana, Off the Rez, and he's also directed four other installments of the ESPN documentary series 30 for 30. He's directed Unguarded, One Not Done, Of Miracles and Men, Survive in Advance, and his latest feature, The Dominican Dream, the Felipe Lopez story, just aired this week on ESPN, and I'm glad to have him on. I'm a huge fan of his work. Jonathan, welcome to Any Given Sunday. My name is Manny. How are you, man?
Thanks, Manny. It's nice to be with you.
Thank you for being on. Like I told you offline, I'm a huge fan of your work, and it's a pleasure to have you on the show here. So why Felipe Lopez? I guess it's my first question. What captivated you about this story? How did this all come out? How did this all come about?
Well, there are two things that happened. One is producer Alex Evans, who has worked with me for a long time now. Way back when, he was the director of basketball operations at St. John's. So he lived the Felipe mania firsthand, and he's had been after me for years to tell the story. And I had been living in Philadelphia at the time, and so I was aware of Felipe, but wasn't part of Felipe mania the way Alex was, and I knew it was quite a phenomenon, but I didn't really understand it from the inside. And then every so often he'd bring it up and we'd talk about it, and then one day last year he brought it up and I said, wait a minute, what if instead of just telling the basketball story, we used Felipe as a way into the immigrant story, specifically the Dominican immigration wave. 400,000 Dominicans came to the U.S., mostly New York, in the 60s, 70s, 80s, into the 90s. But so specifically and uniquely Dominican, but also a universal immigrant story. And that came from my great-grandparents coming over with my grandmother, being an infant, 6 months old, in 1906, they came over from Eastern Europe and settled in the South Bronx, a block and a half from where Felipe's family settled when they came to New York. 80 years apart, but awesome. The same neighborhood and in many ways the same experience. So, my great-grandfather sold newspapers on the street down by City Hall in New York to help support his family, and now his great-grandchildren and his great-grandchildren are, doctors and lawyers and engineers and musicians. Amazing. And filmmakers. Wow. I felt that Felipe and his family were very much part of that same American story, and so that was the inspiration.
Awesome. Awesome. Talk to me about the creative process when you finally decide that this is the topic that you're going to pursue to make another film. Talk to me about the creative process. Do you come into it with kind of your own? I know you mentioned that you hadn't quite lived the Felipe Mania story in real time, but, you know, talk to me about that process when you decide, okay, this is the film that I'm going to pursue. You know, what is everything that encompasses the creative process of making this film? Who do you want to talk to? Who do you want to reach out? How do you want to tell this story? Talk to me about that a little bit.
Well, it's a messy and very imprecise project. You're guided by your gut as much as your brain. Fortunately, in my case, my gut is bigger than my brain, so it's a better muscle for me to use. The process is, for me, is building a mountain of information, whether it's newspaper, magazine articles, archival footage, talking to people before you interview them in person sometimes, but sometimes your reporting is done while you're actually conducting the on-camera interview for the film. But just I bury myself in a mountain of information and assets, archival footage. You decide... you sort of feel what matters, and clearly Felipe's life in the DR, where he spends half his time more or less these days, is very important. So we had to go to the DR and film with him. We knew that. And then you discover things along the way. And the best way to approach this process is to be wide open and let everything in. And then you discover things, and it's the things you discover along the way that can be the most interesting. When we were interviewing Brian Mahoney, the coach of St. John's, when Felipe arrived, he told us that he had, when the team went to play the University of Miami, which was in the Big East at the time, during Felipe's freshman year, there was a message for the coach at the hotel when they arrived that there's a young man in Miami, 17-year-old kid. He's a big-time athlete around there. He'd love to meet Felipe. Would that be possible? If so, here's his number. And that kid was Alex Rodriguez. And
wow.
So we got in touch with Alex Rodriguez after that. We had no idea that he had any connection with Felipe. And he just said, I would love to be in this. Felipe was my hero. I still have the Sports Illustrated that I got him to sign in Miami. Just tell me where to be and when. And so that, you know, that led to Alex Rodriguez being in the film and really giving us a really interesting perspective. So it was, it's a process of discovery. And you just have to immerse yourself in it, really.
How much did you learn about the Felipe story that you hadn't already known? I mean, obviously you knew obviously because you were around back then. But for some of us that are new to this, that were probably too young to kind of understand the full depth of this story, you know, how much did you find yourself learning as you went on and studying this and obviously making a film about it? You know, how much did you learn and were surprised that you didn't even know, just even being around and being alive during this time when Felipe was when the Felipe hype was at its highest, you know, how much did you learn and were you surprised about how much did you learn?
Yeah. I mean, hopefully everything I learned is in the film, and the film ended up being 2 hours on ESPN instead of 90 minutes. So there was a whole lot that we learned. I think that the things that were most impressive that I learned were just the intensity of the scrutiny of him, the celebration of him when he was playing great in high school, and then the crucifixion of him. That's not an improper word to use, but allow me my
it's okay.
Hyperbole. You know, in St. John's, when he started doing poorly, and you know, because I was working at NFL Films in the time living in, at the time living in Philadelphia. It was a few years in my life. I didn't live in New York, so I missed out firsthand. But because high school basketball was, first of all, such a big deal in New York at the time, because the kids weren't all going away to prep schools and basketball academies around the country. And AAU was, other than Gauchos and Riverside, which were in New York, was not that big a deal. Although there were certainly great AAU teams around the country, but it was nothing like it is today, 25 years later. So because Felipe stayed in New York to go to college, it was the same writers, the very same writers who put him on the pedestal when he was in high school. They were the same ones who knocked him off that pedestal when he didn't fulfill the expectations that, by the way, they set for him.
Right.
Felipe didn't show up in the Bronx as a 14-year-old from the Dominican Republic, not speaking a word of English, saying, "I'm the Dominican Jordan." They called him that. And that's a really important part of the film, is that the, you know, the media, of which I'm a part, I suppose, you know, celebrates these children. And then when we decide they're not as good as we thought they were, we crucify them and say they're failures and busts. And boy, if anyone who knows Felipe Lopez and anyone who watches the film, I hope, will know that to call this man anything approaching a failure is just a twisted sense of what's good and bad in the world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What's next for you? What's on the horizon? You know, when any interesting projects that you could share with us here that you got coming up or in the works?
Yeah, I'm doing a series about St. Benedict's Prep School in Newark, New Jersey, which is one of the great basketball programs in the country. But it's an amazing school run by an incredible man named Father Edwin, a monk from the Benedictine order. And it's an amazing story of expectations, but from the other side, when you're expected to uphold a certain standard of humanity, and then you're helped get there, and the basketball program being a part of that for certain kids in that school. That's going to be on a new format called Quibi, which is going to be launched next winter. It's supposed to be the handheld Netflix. It's short content, wow. 7 to 10 minutes, and we're going to do about 15 episodes about St. Benedict's, and that should be really exciting.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, good luck with that. And we'll all be watching and hopefully we'll have you on to discuss that in the future. So I'd like to thank you for joining me today. And before you go, just go ahead and plug your Twitter, social media, where everybody can interact with you.
Oh, thanks. At Hawk Films, H-O-C-K Films is my Twitter handle. I don't have Facebook or Instagram, but so I'm still a 20th century guy. But yeah, that would be cool. Definitely hit me up on Twitter if you have anything to say about the Dominican Dream. I'd be more than happy to discuss it with everybody out there. It means a lot to me, and I appreciate anybody who watches.
Well, we're all watching and we're all waiting in anticipation for the next project. Like I said, a huge fan of your work, and keep on churning them out, man. We really appreciate it.
Manny, thanks so much. It's really nice to be with you, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you. All right, welcome back to the show. I'd like to thank Jonathan for being my guest this week on the podcast. Make sure you follow him on Twitter, @HawkFilms. This guy's amazing, man. He does a lot of great work. He's directed so many great films. Some of the best 30 for 30s on the list, for sure. So definitely check him out. Follow him on Twitter. He's very active on Twitter as well. He engages a lot of his fans, a lot of people that, you know, just want to reach out to him, ask him questions, or just, you know, tell him how great his films are, or
you know, just to talk about the films. He's very receptive to that. So yeah, just make sure you go follow him on Twitter @HawkFilms. That's it for me today. Light show, quick show. I figured we give you guys a shorter show than normal because of how long the show last week was. That show last week was almost 3 hours. a lot of people was like, damn, 3 hours, really? Like, but I mean, we had so much to cover, obviously, with the draft. The draft itself is one episode, and you know, the Endgame is a whole nother show into itself. So long show, but positive feedbacks nonetheless, you know, even with the length, it was positive feedbacks throughout the show. So I figured, you know, with a 3 hour show last week, I figured I'd give you guys something a little lighter this week. Not keep you guys, you know, bored so long, especially for 3 hours. So figured we knock some time off our normal show and just provide you guys with a shorter show than usual. But yeah, nothing much to talk about any other sport. The NBA playoffs are what they are. The Warriors somehow found a way to blow a game yesterday that they had no business winning, but then they ended up having a lead late, almost won the game, should have probably won the game. Then they ended up losing in overtime. I wouldn't be too worried about it. I think the Warriors eventually will figure out a way to win that series. I just don't think the Rockets are that good. The Rockets are one-dimensional. They're not that good. You know, they'll scare. They'll play hard. I think they'll come out next game and they'll play hard. But I think the Warriors are going to be pissed off. I think the Warriors know that they let a game slip away. They had a great opportunity to sweep the Rockets and they blew it. So, I still think Warriors in five. So, nothing has changed there to make me think or stray away from that pick. Sixers Raptors is getting interesting. The Raptors better figure out something. You know, they better hope Siakam's healthy. They got to get more production from their bench. Kawhi is playing amazing, but he's not getting much help. Kyle Lowry's a bum. I mean, let's be honest. He's a bum. Like the fact that Kyle Lowry is making $33 million and is not getting slandered even more for just consistently being a dog in the playoffs, it's just mind-boggling to me. But anyway, you know, it's typical Kyle Lowry. Typical Kyle Lowry just disappears in big spots. So that's him. But that series is interesting. You know, I still think the Raptors are going to win that series. I just think that they're just the better. I don't trust Philly. You know, the moment you start trusting Philly, the moment you start thinking that Philly is going to start doing what they should be doing, which is beating teams and, you know, advancing to an Eastern Conference final, they let you down. They'll go out and they'll deliver a stinker in game four, or they'll go out and get blown out in a game five, or blown out in a game they have no business getting blown out of. So I don't trust Philly just yet. I got to show, you know, Philly, it would show, you know what, if Philly wants me to trust them, show me tonight, you know, have that killer instinct, you know, put Toronto behind the eight ball early, come out, you know, punch them in the mouth early, get them down, get them, you know, get them in a deficit early, and have them being tight. You know, because Toronto's one of those teams that, you know, if they face pressure again, if they go out there and they're in a situation where they're down big, this series is going to go back to Toronto with them down 3-1. And the Sixers are going to win this in six. You know, so let me see the Sixers come out tonight, not mess around, not play around, you know, put a beat down on Toronto early and, you know, assert your dominance and come out there ready to take a commanding lead in a series. Let me see Philly do that. That would go a long way in showing me a lot about Philly. If they come out tonight and do that, Jimmy Butler's played well in this series. He's played better than I actually thought he was going to be outside of game one. Joel Embiid had a tremendous game in game three. We'll see if he's able to follow that up tonight. I'd be a little worried about the Raptors. Not enough to sway me from not picking them again. I still think Raptors in seven. I think that when they're firing on all cylinders, and clearly they're not right now, but when they're firing on all cylinders, I still think they have a better team, a cohesive team than Philly. Philly has more talent, and usually talent reigns supreme in the NBA, but I don't trust Philly. So I'm going to go with Toronto still, but you know, I'll tell you what, I will say this though. If Toronto loses tonight, they're not winning this series. That's for sure. So, as far as Boston, Milwaukee, it's been a weird series. It's a weird series because obviously Boston came out, blew them out in game one. Then Milwaukee, you know, wasn't playing that great for much of game two, then came out in the third quarter and just completely just manhandled Boston. You know, Boston to me had a good chance to go up 2-0 in that series. You know, I thought Boston came out, played really well in game two, didn't sustain it. And Milwaukee found their sea legs a little bit. And, you know, now Milwaukee's feeling good. Obviously they won the other night, up 2-1 in the series. I still think this series has length. I still think this series is a 7-game series. I think I wouldn't be surprised if Boston wins tonight. Or when do they play again? I think it's tonight. Are they? I know Philly and Toronto play tonight, and Portland and Denver is tonight. So I think it's tomorrow. I think game 4 is tomorrow. So I should know that, my bad. But I think Portland is tomorrow. So I should say Boston and Milwaukee game 4 is tomorrow. So it's going to be interesting. I still think they're going to win. I still think they're going to win the series in 7. I still think they're going to win tomorrow and push this series. And this is going to go back to Boston 2-2. I'm not as worried about Boston as I am about Toronto, just because I think Boston, they've got too much talent. They'll figure it out. I have been impressed with the way Milwaukee played, especially in game 3. You know, Milwaukee could have easily let the crowd, the momentum, you know, they were down some early in the game. They managed to fight back. You know, they had a good flow to it. They played well enough to win the game. And obviously they took control there late in the third quarter into the fourth, and they won the game outright. But, you know, look, I still think Milwaukee and Boston are two really good teams. I think one of those two teams is going to get to the final in the East. So I think in a lot of ways this is kind of the Eastern Conference final, because I think whoever wins this series is going to go to the finals. I don't see Philly or Toronto beating any of these two teams. I think these are the two best teams in the Eastern Conference. So I think this is clearly a 7-gamer. Tonight's the swing game of the series. I think if Milwaukee wins this tonight, then the series is over in 5. I don't see Milwaukee winning tonight. I think Boston's gonna find a way to win tonight. I really do. I think they're gonna figure it out. And then Denver and Portland, you know, that series has been a lot better than I actually thought it was going to be, because I didn't think that series was going to be that competitive. I actually thought Portland was going to come out, play better than they've played. And I don't think Portland's played that great. You know, game 2, they played well and they outplayed Denver. But outside of that, Denver's really been the better team for 2 of the 3 games. And Portland's up, obviously, that classic game in game 3, 4 overtimes, a tremendous game, which I missed the last 2 overtimes because I completely fell asleep Friday night. I'm old, man. I'm old. You know, even on the West Coast, like, I fall asleep during playoff games sometimes. It's a lot sometimes, especially if you've had a long week. But I fell asleep, so I missed the last 2 overtimes. So I had to catch up and watch it the next day. But it was a phenomenal game, riveting game, classic game, one of the great playoff games you're ever going to see. And I think Portland's got momentum now. I wouldn't be surprised if they go out there tonight and win. I think the fatigue is going to play a factor in it. I think Denver's probably going to be a little bit more fatigued, I would say, than Portland, just because, you know, they're on the road. They had to expend a lot of energy just to play. I mean, I think both teams will be tired, but I think Portland's got enough to maintain it. Obviously, being at home, having the adrenaline, the intensity, the adrenaline will kick in a little bit, and I think it's enough to carry Portland home. And I think this is a series that'll probably end in 6 in Portland. So they'll win tonight, probably lose game 5 in Denver, and then come back to Portland with game 6 on the line, and they'll probably win it there. So, you know, that's it. I mean, nothing has really changed. I would say the biggest change in this second round so far has been the perception of Toronto. I think Toronto's in some trouble. You know, I think Toronto's got to win tonight. They have to win tonight. You know, I think Boston has to win tomorrow night too, so don't get me wrong, but I think that's the one change that you've seen so far in these playoffs. You know, Philly has just really, you know, Toronto's going to regret, you know, not winning game 2. They really had a nice opportunity to put Philly behind for good. They didn't. Now Philly's looking like they found their sea legs a little bit, so we'll see what happens. I think that's the biggest thing. Outside of that, I don't think anything else has really much changed perception-wise. Let me see the Rockets go out there again and win another game, and then we can start talking about the Rockets and Warriors getting interesting. Until then, I know everybody wants to clown Steph. Steph's got to play better. I have been called the Steph apologist. I can't make excuses for that. He's got to play better. He's played terribly. He's played lousy. I know he's been battling a little bit of a ankle injury, but that's not an excuse. You know, you got to go out there and play better. You got to give your team a better effort. And he blew, you know, and that game last night, that came down to him blowing two layups. I mean, that was a 4-point swing essentially. You know, he blew two. I mean, the first layup was just wide open. I mean, that was egregious. And then the dunk, of course, that basically put him on Shaqton Fool for life. You got to play better than that. And I expect him to come out next game and play better. I think he knows it. I think he knows that. He's the former 2-time MVP. He's the leader of that team. I think he's going to come out. He's going to play better in game four. Will that be enough? We'll see. But, you know, I'm not as confident on the Rockets. I know some people are going to try to say, oh, the Rockets, you know, they're back in the series. I'm not there yet. I'm just not impressed with the Rockets. You know, the Rockets are just this one-dimensional team. They have no plan B. They have no adjustments. They're going to play the way that they're going to play. That's it. The Rockets play one way and one way only. They're going to shoot a lot of threes, or they're going to give the ball to James Harden in isolation sets and let him either create for others or just step back and shoot a three. That's essentially what they are. They don't deviate from that. They don't adjust from that. They don't do it. So that's the Rockets. So I haven't seen enough from the Rockets that makes me think that they're going to challenge the Warriors. I just don't think they're built to beat the Warriors. I really don't. So now watch it this time next week and the Warriors get ousted in six games. You know, crazier things have happened, but I just think the Warriors are going to win. I just think the Warriors are better. I just do. So, but I'm done blabbering. Here I was saying I was going to give you all a quick episode and I still blabbered on for another 10 minutes. But yeah, man, that's it for me today. As always, thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing to the podcast. Without you guys, the listeners, there is no show. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. As always, you can subscribe to the show anywhere, iTunes, SoundCloud. I shouldn't say SoundCloud anymore. iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, anywhere where you can find podcasts. Follow us on social media. At AGS Pod on Twitter, at AGS Podcast on Instagram, on Facebook, Any Given Sunday. Become a member of the AGS Nation, of course. Follow me on Twitter, at The Emmanuel Brown, on Instagram, at The Emmanuel Brown, and on Snapchat, ManyBro15. Hopefully you guys have a happy, safe, blessed week. We'll be back next week with another episode of the podcast. Until then, I am Manny Brown, and I'm signing out. Peace. Serious sound.